I've put up your poster, but go ahead and do it. Are you? Is this about nominations?
This is about the actual election.
Oh, okay, right. Because I did a thing on nomination. Okay.
Okay, so it's just
check. Wait, this
class.
No, it's not, but I'd wait 1 minute because there's some tutorials. Go.
Hi, my name is Alex Monier and I'm running for Vice President Academic Affairs in the US for elections, where you can provide a vote on my ed between the 27th and 29th of March. A few of my main policies are, I want to fight for an increased number of summer and Easter internships within our university, getting external companies to invest in academic-focused internships within the university and ensure they're adequately publicized. I also want to campaign for an earlier release and a deadline for exam timetables and results. And thirdly, I would like to introduce a bulk buy book scheme for core course texts to save you money. Thanks a lot. Please vote Alex Money at Academic Affairs if you'd like the sound of any of those policies. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Alex. Good policies, by the way. Except for the early results. As it was, I had 3 days to mark 150 scripts last year.
That is,
I was pretty compressed. Okay, so, right, I don't know if Petros was planning to come before or after the lecture. I guess he's coming before, I mean after, so I'm just going to crack on. Okay, right, so we did, I introduced basically, these fucking things are just not working at us. They're just not working anymore. I don't know what's happened to every remote I've been using in lectures today has stopped working. Anyway, right, okay. God, the arrow key's not working either. Brilliant. Shit. No. Oh, come on. Ah, yes. Right, okay. Okay, so we did... sorry about the swearing. My daughter keeps telling me, stop swearing. We did Bayesian networks yesterday, so I represented this sort of compact way of representing independence among random variables in the sort of problem space that you're dealing with and that you want to reason about. And we talked a little bit about methods for having efficient representations of the conditional probability tables in there, that noisy OR thing, which meant that even though you had 8 rows to a conditional probability table in your on your node in the Bayesian network, because you had 3 variables on which that variable depended, noisy OR means that you only have to stipulate 3 numbers in spite of the 8 rows, and you can compute the other 5 from them, if you remember that, with the cold and flu and malaria causing fever. Of course, when you're talking 8 versus 3, it doesn't matter. But when you get to real problems with thousands of variables, that kind of thing can be a major boon. But we are what we're going to do today is really talk about, once we've got our Bayesian network with the conditional probability tables in place, we're going to talk about how you perform inference with them. Okay, so we're not learning Bayesian networks here. I'm not going to talk actually at any point in this course about how you learn conditional probability tables by observing data. We're going to assume we've got the probabilities in the model, and we're not estimating the probabilities in the model, but what we are doing is estimating eventualities given those probabilities. So the basic task is this. You've got your Bayesian network with the conditional probability tables on each node in the network. Your task is, given some variables whose values you're interested in, and it may be a subset of the ones in the network that you're interested in, and some observed event, estimate the likelihood on the values of those variables, right? So, for example, as a person owning a property, I may not care about, you know, whether the alarm went off or not. What I really care about is whether there's a burglary, okay? The alarm is there as a random variable in my network because it influences the probability of burglary, but it's burglary I'm interested in, okay? And all I can observe is whether John calls or Mary calls. So, and in that kind of framework, this would be the kind of query I would want to know, okay? The probability distribution over burglary, given the events that have happened, suppose it's that John and Mary have both called, okay? And so we want to work out this kind of thing. In fact, this is what it is, given the Bayesian network example I gave yesterday. It's the probability of burglary is 0.284. The probability there isn't is 0.716, in spite of the fact that they both called. Okay? And that's certainly higher than the prior probability of burglary. Okay? So what we want to do is discuss algorithms for computing that. Okay? For computing arbitrary queries like that. Exact algorithms, in that it is going to give you the mathematically absolutely accurate answer. I will talk about approximate inference, algorithms for doing approximate inference with Bayesian networks next week. And the algorithms for approximate inference are necessary because of the computational complexity of inference with Bayesian networks, which is quite high. Okay. All right, so what we're looking at then are queries of this nature. We've observed some stuff, call it E, and what we're interested in is the values of things we can't see, namely X, right? We can't observe their values directly. We can only reason about them from what we've observed. And the Bayesian network is one where, in order to represent the problem accurately, we have other variables too. Right, so there are other variables other than those in E that influence X that we also don't know the values of, but we've got a reason about them because they influence the values of X. Now, in that situation, this is just basically Bayes' rule at work, right? This first equality, right, is the relationship between a conditional probability and a joint probability, because Bayes says this, right? Probability of X given E is their joint probability over the probability of E, right? That's Bayes. Now, this is just a number, right? This is a specific value, E's specific value. X big X means I'm a probability distribution, right? I want a probability distribution for this random variable. I want to know its probability for every value of X. But E is a specific value. That's just going to be fixed. It doesn't change as I change my value of X and reason about the likelihood of that, of X having that value. So it means that I can just kind of abstract over it like this and do normalization later, right? And make sure that the numbers I come up with for all these various values of X sum to one, right? I will end up writing the appropriate denominator and normalizing, right? So that first equality then is Bayes' rule and normalization. And the second one is marginalization, okay? Now, this joint probability, I can't access directly, right? Because there are other things whose values I don't know that influence whether X has this value given a particular value and E has this value, okay? So you sum them out. All the possible values on those variables Y, whatever they may be, right? Okay, so that's marginalization. So, if this is my query, right, I want to know if there's a burglary, given that John and Mary have called, which is basically that, right, is the shorthand way of writing it. Then here's normalization and Bayes, and here's marginalization, because there are two other variables in the network, the alarm one and the earthquake one. I don't care about their values, but I have to reason about their values because they influence my estimates on the burglary. Okay? All right, so that's the calculation I'm going to have to make to answer my query. And you already saw yesterday that you can calculate these joint probabilities, right? Here's how, right? If you remember, the joint probability over your n random variables in a Bayesian network is the product of each of the conditional probability of each guy given its parents, the values on the parents, okay? So with that in mind, we've got this joint probability here. All I've done here is turn that joint probability into that product of conditional probabilities, right? This is the product of the probabilities of each of those variables given the values on the parents, okay? So that's the Bayesian network at work here. I've exploited conditional independence as given by the Bayesian network to get from this, and in particular this guy, to this guy. Okay? I'm dealing with burglary being positive at this point. And then that'll be, to get the other, I'll get 1 minus negative. Okay, 1 minus the other guy. All right, so now, we've got this big fat sum we've got to do. We've got to sort of sum over. We've got to work out this product for every value of A, every value of E, and then sum over each of those products, right? That's what this is saying. And it's more efficient to do that if you take out of this product, anything that doesn't depend on A. So PB and PE don't depend. There's no A in those guys. So we take them out of that sum. And PE ends up here. PB can be outside the whole sum because that doesn't depend on E either. It's just more efficient to do it this way. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay. Right, so to compute this, then we're going to have to loop through variables, the values of these E and A variables, okay? Forming products and then sums as we go. Here's the network from last time. okay, just as a reminder of what the numbers are. Okay, so the alarm goes off, is influenced by whether there's a burglary or earthquake. Whether John and Mary call, it's caused by an alarm, but there's noise in the system. Okay, so these, you know, John's not guaranteed to call when the alarm goes off, neither's Mary, and in fact might call when the alarm doesn't go off. The sum then that we had here essentially looks like this, right? Here's me at the start. This is PB. This is my prior on the burglary. So that's this guy. And then I come to a sum node. So this is the summing over E. And E can take two values. This is going to be the E subtree, and that's the not E subtree here. Okay, so the probability of E, right, that's here, is 0.002. Of not E, it's 1 minus that, that's 0.998. And then we come to the next sum, which is going over A, right? So here I'm going to have a sum over A, and here I'm going to have a sum over here, A. This is being the E branch and this being the not E branch. And A's got two values, A and not A. So here's the A branch, here's the not A branch, here's the A branch, here's the not A branch. So this basically is the product of A not E, that combination of values. This is this product is the not A not E. This is the not A E, and this is the A E. Okay? So you can work bottom up from this tree, and you multiply when your node has no plus in it, and you add the results on the daughters when you've got a plus in it. And you go up the tree like that, and boom, you'll get the answer. Okay? And then you can do the same for not B. But that's really inefficient, okay? Because I'm performing the same multiplication several times. Even though this is a tiny, tiny Bayesian network. So I'm performing this twice, right? And this one I'm performing twice as well, which is wasteful. And so it would be better to do the multiplication once and keep a record of the answer and use it whenever I need to use it, okay? So that's what the algorithm variable elimination allows you to do. It's a record-keeping exercise, basically, which allows you to avoid repeated calculations. So the basic idea is you store the results after doing it once, and you work bottom-up by evaluating sub-expressions. So here's how it works. Here's our sum. Here's our complex sum of products and sums. You take each probability, right? We've got in the sum. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. And you label it with a factor. And the argument, so it's an F, F1, F2, F3, F4, F5. And the argument to that factor is any variable whose value will vary in the whole sum. So the value of A varies, because we're marginalizing it, right? So this m given a is a factor f5a, not a factor f5ma, because the value of m does not vary. That's a given, right? M is true, right? That's one of the conditions on this. Similarly, the probability j given a, we turn it into a factor f4a, just a, no j, because j is given. With this one, it's got three variables in it, and they're all going to vary. B's going to vary because that's our query, right? So I'm interested in the probability it's true and it's false. And A and E vary because we're marginalizing over them. So that's got three arguments. This one has one, and this one has one, okay? Now, okay, so that's us labeling these with factors. Well, what's the point of that? Well, by the number of arguments you've got here, you can work out how big the matrix is of probabilities that you have to store. This one has one argument, namely A. A can take two values, so that's a 2x1 matrix. And the 2x1 matrix is basically the probability of M given A and the probability of M given not A. So this factor is going to be that matrix, okay? And it's 2x1. This factor has three variables in it, and each one takes two values. So that is a 2x2x2 matrix, okay? Which is going to give you the values, the various values of A, B, and E. So the probability of A given B, E is in there. The probability of not A given B, E. The probability of A given not B, not E, etc. Okay? They're all in there in this 2x2x2 matrix. Right? So I'm doing here is converting this sum into a bunch of cells in a matrix. In a bunch of cells in a bunch of matrices, actually. And you do the same for PE and PB. Okay, so that's now I've got my matrices with cells with certain probabilities in them. Of course, some of these probabilities I can then look up these probabilities off the CPT, right? Okay, so I can populate all these matrices, the cells in these matrices, with the table lookup in the conditional probability table in the Bayesian network. All right, so here's the sum that we want to work out. Now what do we do? Well, what you do, you start by summing out A. So you're sort of working this way, and we're going to sum out A. So here's our matrices, and what we do is what's known as pointwise product to create a new matrix where A, we've basically eliminated A. And the way you do that is through pointwise multiplication, pointwise product, which I'll talk about on the matrix, which I'll talk about in a minute. Don't worry about what that operation is yet. But you do it with positive A and with negative A, and then you sum the result, and that gives you a new matrix, which instead of having three matrices, one that's 2x2x2, a 2x1 and a 2x1, you've got one matrix and it's 2x2. Okay? I'll talk about this pointwise product in a minute, how you do that. So what we're left with then is this. And this is a 2x2 matrix, this is 2x1. And you do the same thing again. We're going to sum out E. So you do pointwise product on this matrix with E positive, pointwise product with E negative. You sum the result, and what you end up with is another matrix where E's eliminated. Don't care about E anymore. I factored in its influence on my query. And it's 2x1. Okay? So then what you've got is this, and you just do pointwise product, and you get your answer. Right, what is pointwise product? Well, what you're calculating then is essentially this, okay, in a pointwise product. You're making one big fat matrix out of a product of two matrices where they share values, some values, right? The y's in this case, right? So what I'm creating is a big matrix from a product of two little guys, where F1, this matrix, has X1, some X's and some Y's, and F2 has those Y's and the Z's, but no X's. Okay, so here's an example, right, involving A, B, and C. So I've got a matrix where for each combination of values of A and B, I've just put a probability, or it doesn't matter, these are just numbers, and each combination of B and C, this matrix records a probability as well. Okay. To get your 2x2x2 matrix, what you do is you do multiply together for the relevant combination of three truth values on A, B, and C, the relevant rows on these two individual matrices. So in the row where they're all true, this first row is the one where they're all true, right? A, B, and C are all true. So I do the product 0.3 times 0.2, and that gives me the correct number in the cell for the matrix I'm trying to produce. For T, A true, B true, and C false, this is A true and B true. This is B true and C false. So I need to multiply this first row of this first matrix with the second row of the second one, right? And so on and so on, okay? So what you do with it more generally with pointwise product is that when you're working out the number that you need to put in the relevant cell in the matrix you're calculating, you take the value for that cell from the individual matrices that share those values for your variables and you multiply them together, okay? That's pointwise product. So it's not matrix multiplication, okay? It's not that. It's just a way of making sure you only calculate a joint probability once, essentially, okay? By record keeping, by putting numbers in certain places in certain cells in your matrices. So that's pointwise product. So that's what I'm doing when I do this guy, okay? I'm basically making sure all my A's are true. So I would be taking only products of things where A is true. In this case, these guys would matter, okay? Whoops, where am I going? All right, so summing out is similarly straightforward, right? Because any factor that doesn't have a variable that needs to be summed out can be moved out the summation process. Okay, so if, for example, you've got this, then I can move these two guys out because E's not part of them, right, and do this. And so I'll work out this factor, sum out, and then work out the product, pointwise product of the result. So it means that matrices only multiply when you need to sum something out, right? You're only doing matrix multiplication at the point where you need to sum and never at any other time. And it means that with this branching thing, I only do this once, right? I only calculate that once, basically. And I only calculate this part of the branch once this way. Okay, so here's another example. Suppose that I'm interested in how reliable John is. And suppose I've got a little bit of datum. I know for a fact there was a burglary yesterday. And I want to estimate the probability that John called, given that there's a burglary. Okay? So this equality is basically marginalization and Bayes' rule at work. Okay, and then I turn this joint probability into this product of conditional probabilities through the chain rule and through making use of conditional independence as given by my Bayesian network. Okay, now I can take, I need to take any of these probabilities that don't vary on E, A, and N, the variables that matter in that they influence my estimate on this query. But I don't care about their value. That's why I'm marginalizing them out. And their values are hidden to me. So I can take any of these probabilities out of the sums if they don't contain E, A, or M. So this B can go right outside. And in fact, given that it can go right outside, I'm just going to change my alpha to alpha prime and get rid of the probability of B entirely. This E can go here. The A given BE can go here, the JA can go in here, and all I'm left with under the M guy is the probability of M given A, right? So that's what's happened in this next row here, okay? Now, the sum of the over M of the probability of M given A is 1. Why? What is that sum? If I'm to write it out, what am I varying and then summing?
M and not M,
right? So, so that sum is this. Okay? Which is one. Which is going to call or not, right? For sure. Okay? Given that it's one, it means I can just get rid of it. Because one times something is something. Okay? So then the result is that the factors I need to worry about are just these three, right? These probabilities I'm going to turn into matrices. And I've got to turn them into matrices that reflect what's varying. So A is varying because I'm marginalizing it. J is varying because that's the query I'm interested in. Here, with this one, A given BE, well, B is given. That's not varying, right? B is true throughout this calculation. So it's only A and E that are varying, both of them varying because I'm marginalizing them out, and E is varying because I'm marginalizing it out. So those are my matrices. And so I know that this is 2 by 2, 2 by 2, 2 by 1, okay? Now I do pointwise product on these guys, right, to sum out A. So I'm going to have a result that is a matrix that's 2 by 2 with just J and E in them once I've summed it out. I'm not going through this entire calculation because I'd need a great big fat table to do it, but you can see it in Russell and Norvig. The table's just too big to show properly on a slide. And then we want to sum out E from these guys, right? And the result of doing that will be a new matrix where only J varies. And that basically gives you the answer. It will be two numbers, one where J is true, one where J is false, and you normalize to get the probability, right? So that alpha prime in the end is 1 over the sum of those two numbers for F5, whatever they are. Okay? So you are eliminating all the variables that aren't ancestors, right, to the query this way. So that's it, Petros. I'm glad you came early. So that's exact inference for what it's worth with Bayesian networks, but it really is intractable in the worst case. I mean, it doesn't look like it here because I've given a very tiny Bayesian network, so it all looks very simple and efficient. But I'm afraid life ain't that easy. These things get just way too big to handle pretty quickly. And so what we're going to do next time is supply some approximate inference methods using things like sampling. Okay, Petros. Any questions? A very quiet lot.
Thanks. All right. So I hope you all got the email about the assignment marks being out, and you can go to the IDEO and collect a personalized marking sheet with some feedback for you guys. I just wanted to announce real quick, we had an idea of this competition that whoever builds the fastest AC3 algorithm can actually win a box of chocolates and eternal fame. And I just wanted to announce the winner. So basically the winning strategy was to just use AC3 with MRV, not LCV. LCV didn't quite work for that particular problem. And the other thing that was good was also using the MAC algorithm. So the MAC algorithm is described in 632 in Russell and Norvig at the end. It just says that you basically use AC3, but instead of supplying all of the arcs, you only supply the ones that point to the variable you just assigned, because that's the one you actually decreased the domain as soon as you assigned it. So it's better if you that's the only arcs that are probably going to change as soon as you do that. So basically, there's one person that did that, and if you do the strategy, you can solve the Sudoku problem in 3 seconds. So that's pretty good, and you can do it yourselves to just have a Sudoku solver to play around at home. So the winner of the competition is Alexander Kotjabashev, if I pronounce this. Come up. They are quite nice, I'm hoping. So, congratulations, well done. Really well done. That box of chocolates and eternal fame. I hope you guys enjoyed the assignment. I hope it wasn't too hard. And I hope you learned a few things about CSPs. And that's it. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
good,
guys.
Good stuff.
See you next
week. Okay. Were you the person who was marking this?
Sper că sunt apătezi din UK, pentru că sunt cei mai sărbășați pentru că nu Thank you. Și apoi vrea să se zice.
Nu.
Nu, nu știu.
Nici măcar n-a zis, de fapt.
Da, exact. Probabil a apărut doar. Și nu-mi cere să vă zic. Am vrut să zic înainte să nu fiu nevoită să mă refuz. Da, da, e scary. Și îmi pare rău de el.
Am mâncat undeva, știi, să fiu entuziasm, să arăt entuziasm.